Thank you. I expect a lot of you came this evening because you already have a sense of some dissatisfaction with the media. And so, yes, that's a yes, okay. And there's an expression in the media, don't bury the lead, you know, keep your key point right up at the front. So for those of you that have to leave very quickly after 2 minutes, I thought I would give you my solution to what to do with the media, and then we'll get down talking more about it. But there's an email going around with some bumper stickers, some ideas for bumper stickers. And my solution for what we have to do with the media is this. Everyone with a car will volunteer. Those that don't have cars, bicycles, they'll buy half a bumper. It's someplace you can put a bumper sticker. We'll put this bumper sticker on, and we're going to spread out to the LA Times. We'll go to the New York Times. We'll go to the Chicago Tribune. You know, we'll cover the major media. And the bumper sticker will say this. For God's sake, evolve. Right? Okay, that's my solution. I'll talk about it a little bit later. But now, what's the problem, if that's the solution? Well, some of you may have seen, and Bob McChesney is one of my heroes and one of the good people working on the issue of the media and what can be called media reform, the need for media reform. And I believe he's just created this. I should do this right away. I'll talk about this later, but if you want to make notes of some of the websites or some of the people, I'll give you some cards. I'll talk about them in a minute. There are two sets of cards. So if you just take these and pass these around. And can I give you... This is a different card. And if you want to, for example, make a note of Bob McChesney's new website, it's called freepress.net. That's www.freepress.net. And he sent out an email reminding us of the relationship between the election we've just had and the massive misinformation in the heads of so many people who voted. And he's very articulate. He's the man, if you've seen Outfoxed, who begins Outfoxed with his analysis and his good comments about essentially, if you have a democracy, if you have what's called so-called democracy, but you don't have citizens that have essentially valid information, then what do you have? You really don't have a democracy. You have, in fact, the people that control the information, if it's misinformation, in the citizens' heads. You have a most skillful form of controlled society, much more skillful than if you do it the way, say, Saddam Hussein or Stalin did, where you do it with guns, and everyone knows that the media isn't free. I need to restrain myself. I'm an inveterate storyteller and joke teller and things. But in Russia, it used to be a standard understanding that there was no Izvestia in Pravda and no Pravda in Izvestia. One of those names means truth and the other means news, is the names of the newspapers in Russian. So there was no news and truth and no truth and news. But people knew that. Everyone knew that. Whereas it's much more skillful, Bob McChesney points out, and I agree completely, to have a system where people think you have free press. So, by the way, one of the books I'm just reading now is Our Unfree Press, about 100 years of media criticism by Bob McChesney and Ben Scott. Okay. And he points out, Bob McChesney, in his email, in this letter that's posted on his website on the media and the election, some statistics from the University of Maryland that said surveying supporters of the president, 72% still believe that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. 75% believe that Iraq was providing substantial support for al-Qaeda. 66% believe that Bush supports participation in the International Criminal Court. And 72% believe that he supports the treaty banning landmines. The catch, none of these are true. That's misinformation that people have in their head. Can you hear me still over that, or is there a way to shut that? Thank you. Okay. Good. Okay. Another category, however, that's very important to be aware of and maybe is even more critical, and I want to point out just these two stories related to that, which is information that people should have in their heads that they don't have in their heads. They don't know. Basic information. And I'll give you, remarkably, two stories that are related. They're similar. And the similarity and the outcome in terms of media coverage is striking. The first story comes from the New England Journal of Medicine, September 24th, 1992. And that's a report that said three things. And this is arguably our most credible medical journal. It said, because of the destruction of Iraq's civilian infrastructure during the Gulf War, there were epidemics of waterborne disease throughout the country. And we estimate that 46,900 deaths of children occurred that wouldn't have occurred before 1990. 47,000 children's deaths in just 8 months. Now, if you were to extrapolate that for an 18-month period, you'd come out with 105,000 children's deaths under five. That's a piece of information that should have been a headline story when it came out in every newspaper. This was a couple months before Bill Clinton took office. Actually, September, October, and 2 months before he actually won the election in 92. Okay? That could have, if we knew that, it could have made a difference in how Bill Clinton could have acted towards Iraq, at least how American citizens would know to push him, rather than the way we did, which was to continue economic sanctions on that country. Okay? That's one piece of information. Remarkably, now here's a second. I'm curious how many of you know, I've been away, I just flew back through Fort Worth Dallas Airport, which is a traumatic experience for me. And I talked to some guy there, and I said, oh, we got talking. And I don't think he'd heard the story, although I don't think he wanted to admit that he hadn't heard this. And I was trying to say to him what I was going to do this evening, talking about the media and one of the problems. He saw this book. He said, "Our unfree press. What's unfree about it?" he said. Well, I started to give him an example about what was published in the Lancet Medical Journal online at the end of October. I think it was posted October 29th. Of a report from Johns Hopkins University, one of our major medical universities. And what it was an estimate done by sending medical staff into Iraq to survey different households, even under the conditions of the war, about how many people had died in the last 18 months compared to the 15 months before the invasion. Then the statistics were done, they were extrapolated across the country, and they came up with a number of how many Iraqis had died in the last 18 months. And I'm curious how many people have seen that or heard of it. Good. Well, this is not exactly, I wish it were, a cross-section. So I don't need to go on too much longer. In fact, I won't go on any longer except to say that's a report that should have been a headline story, I think, in every paper. The answer is 100,000 deaths. 100,000. Well, the relevance of these numbers and the facts we don't know, I think, are as crucial and as much of an indictment of the state of our media as the facts we do know, the misfacts, the misinformation that people have in their head. So, when I spoke before the war at one time, I remember that the line which got the largest amount of applause, of support in agreement, was the statement that I made in the middle section of what I was saying, which is, our mass media is just terrible. I don't know how else to say it. There are some bright exceptions, and I have the hard part, because Susan is going to cover the alternative media, and certainly there's good alternative media, I won't steal her thunder and try and recommend the things you should be listening to and reading, but I think a lot of you already know some of them, and that's good. That's clearly a choice. But what do we do with the mass media? What do we do with what's called the mainstream media? Well, I listened, I'm quite sure On Democracy Now! Is where I first heard that report of 100,000 deaths from The Lancet. It might also have been on the BBC, because I think it was there also. But I turned on that evening, that I heard it in the morning, I turned on PBS NewsHour and listened for the entire hour, and there was nothing. Not one mention of this report of 100,000 deaths. For those people that think that, well, okay, there is NPR and PBS, well, it is there. It may be better than other stations, but think again, if I'm afraid I have to say, if you think that you're going to be given all the essential facts that you need to know of that day's news. I'm afraid you won't. On that same day that I first heard that report, I sent the report that I got to a man that I've been friends with and cultivating a relationship with in the Seattle PI, who's the foreign editor, and sent him this story. Larry Johnson is his name. And he's done good work. He's gone to Iraq with us three times with the PI. That's a Hearst newspaper in town. And it shows that it's a mistake to give up on the mass media. And some of you may have seen this story from 99, which is a trip that we took with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility that the PI traveled with us about and did this great 8-page special report. Was reprinted 15,000, we reprinted it 15,000 times with the paper agreeing. They won an Aronson Award for good journalism. The paper sent Larry Johnson and Dan DeLong, who was the photographer, to New York to receive the award. We distributed it to everyone in Congress. I remember calling from D.C. the publisher to let him know this was going on. That's, you know, good for them, good for us. And I told Larry about the story, and he put two good stories. I'm not saying he wouldn't have done it anyhow, but because of his sense of the importance of this, he put two good stories in the Seattle PI of 1,000 words each, basically, on that story of 100,000 deaths in Iraq. Okay. And then there were the following day a letter, and then the next day another letter mentioning that, and the following day, I forget whose opinion piece it was, a nationally syndicated writer that the PI had chosen to put in, also talking about 100,000 deaths. So that's how the story gets out. That's how the PI, in this case, was working to inform us. The Seattle Times, on the other hand, in this case, I have to say, very regretfully, their entire coverage that I could find as of a couple days ago when I left was a total of 149 words on this report. It was the last item in the Iraq Notebook, a small news item. And it wasn't even under the headline, Lancet Medical Journal reports 100,000 deaths. The headline was, British dismiss Lancet estimate. That's the whole story. And I called a friend who works on the editorial page of the Seattle Times, and he didn't know about this. I said, you know the number? No. I told him, and he was shocked. And I said, no surprise. If you got your news from the Seattle Times, the news section has been terrible. But another, I think, maybe our major success with the Seattle Times, with the whole media here in town locally, was when Mindy Cameron was the editorial page editor. We got her through writing polite, thoughtful letters with a lot of people signing on to agree to meet with three people that had been to Iraq. One of them was Jerry Haynes. And Mindy Cameron wrote a personal opinion piece, editorial, in the paper under her name, talking about that meeting. And it's wonderful. It shows what courage she had to admit her own having ignored this issue and how she was touched by one person, Jerry Haynes, who came in and said, I'm a grandmother 8 times. I go to Iraq because I care about children. And what will our children say to us when they know about what happened in Iraq over all these years? What can we say? And then Mindy Cameron did what Larry tries to do in the PI. She took the initiative within the range of actions that she could and began a series of 5 more wonderful editorials on this subject about sanctions. And I'll just read the beginning, because I want, this is the largest circulation newspaper in the state of Washington. And it says, imagine if a U.S. cruise missile were to land on a kindergarten and kill 165 children. Imagine now that it was launched knowing it would hit that kindergarten, and further, that one of these missiles were launched at a different kindergarten every day for a month. That's 5,000 children. And that is what economic sanctions on Iraq has done. So, that went out to 500,000 people on the Sunday edition, the lead editorial, under the masthead of the newspaper. So, I conclude several things which are very much related to the issue of what to do with the media. I don't for a minute diminish, say it's untrue, the argument no doubt many of you have heard that economic interest in advertising and the ownership of the media influence the coverage of the newspapers or the TV, if you TV even, maybe more so. But I think that's not the whole story. And I point to my experience with the two local papers here, which is where most of my experience has been, where over years with the Seattle PI, when they're doing this good stuff on the news side, the editorial side, and Joanne Bird just wouldn't do anything. Not a decent editorial. I complained to her, I'd rather have a bad editorial than none at all. And finally she gave me what I asked for. On the other hand, the Seattle Times, the news section, is just terrible. This, I mean, 149 words to cover 100,000 deaths. Dennis Halliday resigns, the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations, protesting the head of the Oil for Food Program, saying this is genocide, and the Seattle Times covers that in 42 words. I mean, that's not, nobody can tell me that that's a difference in journalistic judgment of the importance of these issues, as I've been told. So, the same time that Seattle Times editorial page, when Mindy was here, was great. So, the media is not a monolith. Even within one institution, the Seattle Times is with hundreds of people, is hundreds of different people who each have ranges of action what they can do. And I think it's very important to remember with some subtlety the reality of the situation, and not to think, either not to write them off, and not to think that the answer is to rage against the machine. I think we'll be more skillful, more successful, if we try and do what I'll mention in the second book here now, because I think it relates to my own experience with the media and what I think we need to do and what Citizens Committee for Responsible Journalism, I hope, will become a force to do, which is to try and understand the, let's call it the psychological dilemma that people that are working in the media find themselves in. And that is, you know, I think there are a number of people in the media who know all the things that I'm saying to you. Even down in Lawton, Texas, we had a TV station come out to cover what we were doing down there. Now that I say that, somebody wants to know what I was doing out there, raise your hand during questions and answers. But I've got 2 minutes. I want to try and hold it to 20 minutes. So Susan will have 20 and we'll have questions and answers. And I said, how long have you been doing this? She said, 7 years. She's a newspaper reporter. And it turned out she was very sympathetic and listened and said to us, I'm going to try and push for more than the 30-second news item for the next day when I can do this. And I said, you know, so much of the media is just terrible in its coverage of stuff. And she agreed. She shook her head. People, you know, that aren't denying too much know this. But then those are the people that go to work and within the constraints of what they can do, I think have to feel terrible some of the time, every day when they go to work. And we need to have some kind of sympathy with that. And even with the people that are deep in denial, that say, well, this is a good job, this, you know, that are just putting out the company line. And it's about denial. So the other book I've been reading is by Daniel Goleman. I've read it before. It's called Vital Lies, Simple Truths. You know it?
It's a fabulous book.
I think so. because it deals with the issue, the psychology of self-deception. Okay. Now, I'd like to see everyone who in the room has never deceived themselves ever once. Please raise your hand. Maybe there are some, I don't know, but I'm not one. So if we think of it that way and think of the message on that bumper sticker and begin to realize that if we went around, I know from personal experience, when I go down to visit my mother, I always end, have at least one mother story in my repertoire of talks. When I go down to visit my mother in Florida, and she'll argue with me about Israel-Palestine, where I've lived for 5 years, and I know, or Iraq, where I've traveled 9 times, and I know, and she'll argue just because she watches the news on television. And she thinks, well, her son can't be right. It's painful for her to have to consider that her son might be right about these things because of what it implies about the whole worldview and things that she's grown up wanting to believe. And so in my good moments, when I don't go down and shout, "For God's sake, mother, evolve," when I don't do that, and I can have some skill and see myself and herself in a different way, it changes the atmosphere. It changes how successful I am. And it changes the state, the technical state that changes. It changes the state of love that can exist. And I think that's how we have to apply to the mass media. Not for a minute, go to Reclaim the Media, Susan might talk about, and McChesney's website, and read the analysis of the press. Those things are important and we need to know. And I hardly mentioned the FCC rulings and where we'll be now and the need to work to reverse the trend of consolidation, where there were like 50 major corporations 20 years ago that were controlling most media, and now it's 5. We need to reverse that. We need to change the rules. We need to change the structure of things. Those things have a real influence. But what we can do and how we can try and work from the ground up with Citizens Committee for Responsible Journalism, I hope we can try and be effective with our local media the way some of the national organizations like FAIR and Bob McChesney's group are trying to be with the national media. We can try and work locally. So the last thing I'll say is the card from Citizens Committee for Responsible Journalism that I hardly spoke much about. Go to the website, ccrj-wa.org, and join up. Just what you're doing is just lending your name in support. So we have several hundred, 300 names now, I think. If we get 400, 500, 1,000 names, we'll carry more influence with the papers. Then we can write and say, hey, 149 words to cover 100,000 deaths in Iraq. Please, you have to do better. You have a responsibility to us, and that's what we need to call our media about. So with that, I'll end, and we'll take Q&A later, but I'm glad to pass the microphone to Susan now. Thank you.
Can you say it back?
Huh?
Can you say it back?
You may. I went on 5 minutes more, I think.
Oh, such a pleasure to be here tonight with Bert, with you all. And I wanted to focus on what some of the solutions might be. I think that there's a lot of analysis here in the room of what's behind the kind of poor media that we have. And I'm hoping that in the question and answer and the discussion period later that we can hear some of that from you all, some of your own critiques, some of your own insights into what's happening with the media. But I wanted to just dive right in to the what I see as a few steps to remedying the situation, or at least changing the direction. And before I get started on that, I wanted to let you know that I brought a bunch of materials with me tonight. I've brought about 50 copies of several different things that I thought you might enjoy taking with you. One of them, you'll find all of this on the back table there. My colleague and partner, Jonathan Lawson's over there, and he set those up. One of the things you'll find on that table is Robert McChesney's book, The Problem with the Media. And some t-shirts. But what I brought for you was a list of who owns the media in our area. So it's a Seattle area media ownership list. So we can keep that awareness with us of who owns our local media, what are their interests. I also brought some Northwest community media resources. Who are the alternative media providers in our area? I also brought an interesting document called Fixing Radio. It's a Seattle statement on radio that came out of a weekend-long forum that Jonathan and a coalition of other groups put together to put their best thinking towards fixing the kind of broadcast media that we have. What kind of solutions are possible? We also have a document back there that looks at the voting records of some of our representatives at a local and federal level. And then the last piece is a guide to cable franchises, which may be something that's starting to appear on the radar here. So one of the steps, just to get going on that, that I think is awfully important, and this event tonight is a part of that, is the importance of educating ourselves and each other about the media that we get. Just learning as much as we can, keeping as much awareness as we can of who owns the media that we're taking in and what are their interests. And I'm just, as a quick survey, I'm wondering if folks here might be able to name those top five, the big media, those huge media conglomerates that do own 85% of the media that we get here in the U.S. Anyone want to give it a go? They are big. They are big. Sorry? Yes. Yes.
Disney.
Disney, yes.
Murdoch.
We're almost there.
Viacom.
Yes. I think you got them all. AOL, Time Warner, Disney, General Electric, News Corporation, and Viacom. And then if you're going to add on the sixth internationally, does anyone know that one? Sorry? Vivendi. Vivendi Universal. So those are the biggies. We've got a couple of them here in our area. Disney and Viacom both own several stations, and of course they produce a lot of the programming that we get in our area. I think that it's important to understand what makes the media unfree, and I won't go into that. Bert did a little bit already, but I think that it's worth digging into those economic interests, that many of these companies are publicly traded corporations. They're accountable to their shareholders. By law, they need to make a profit. They're also accountable to their primary audience, which is their advertisers. 95% of the revenues for broadcast media come from advertising, and it's 85% for print media. So that's their number one concern in most of the commercial media. But beyond that, there are other steps that we can take. And a very important one, I think, is seeking out diverse media sources, which many of you, I'm sure, do. So I did bring a handout that has some of the Seattle area independent and alternative media. And just to share a couple of my own favorites, I like to get media from a variety of media types and also a variety of mainstream and alternative media. On the web and weblogs, I like to go to Google News just to get kind of the big picture internationally of what the mainstream media think are the headlines of the day, and also to get some of those international headlines in a very quick way. CommonDreams.org, very good political weblog, Daily Kos, K-O-S, DailyKos.org. I didn't bring these as a list, as a printout, I'm afraid. And several magazines, including...